So how is everyone this morning? Are you well? Everyone happy? Nice sunny day, yes? Who said no? No, it's not. You're very welcome, as Mag said, to Liberty Bray. This morning we're going to talk briefly, hopefully, about one of the most famous sermons in the Bible, the Sermon on the Mount. And realizing that when you start something like this, there's probably too much in such so much in those first 11 verses that we could be here for the next 11 years. So we won't be like that. We'll try and do it in the next half an hour. But I want to go through each verse today, and I'm going to end this morning just following up on what Suzette had said at the end of this sermon. I'm going to try and pray for people as well at the end. Is that okay? Because there's a need for it, and we want to be able to pray for people this morning. So why not open your Bible to Matthew chapter 5 and verse 1. And we're going to read from verse 1 to all the way to verse 13, actually. Just before we do, to bring some sort of context, the Sermon on the Mount is part of what's called the Beatitudes. And that consists of Matthew chapter 5, 6, and 7. And as I said, there's loads in those particular chapters themselves. But we're going to focus on just this part of it, the Sermon on the Mount. And indeed, if you Google it, many preachers and teachers will indicate the fact that this is one of the most famous sermons that Jesus ever preached. And indeed, Matthew chapter 5, 6, and 7 is indeed one of the longest teachings Jesus gives in the Gospels about what it means to be a disciple of Christ. And there's loads in it. And these are literally the words of Jesus that we're reading out in the Gospels today. So it's important when we read them to know what they're about. So let's just read Matthew chapter 5, verse 1. Is that okay? Is everyone with me? Great. Now, it says, "Now when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach them. He said, Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, blessed, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you or falsely say all kinds of things against you because of me. Rejoice," he says, "and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." Verse 13 says, "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot." We'll leave it at that. So as I said, the sermon in part is part of what's called the Beatitudes. And the Beatitudes, the word Beatitude comes from a Latin word meaning to be blessed. But you've ever asked the question, what does the word blessed mean? Because we read it all the time in the Bible, don't we? And the word blessed comes from a Greek word called makarios, which means to be happy. Now, not a Pharrell Williams type of happiness, for those of you who know the song. If you don't, I don't know where you've been. But this was a type of happiness, a state of well-being, a divine inner joy, a perfect type of happiness that comes from being a follower of Christ. Blessed can mean happy. So when you put that in, it makes this whole chapter seem very strange. In Hebrew, the word conveys the idea of being strengthened. So blessed in Hebrew conveys the idea of being strengthened in your weakness. That's another great way to think about it, isn't it? When you're blessed, what are you? You're strengthened in your weakness. It also means, I could have talked about the meaning of it for a while. It means to kneel, it means to bless, it means to praise and to salute. So to be blessed means to be happy. Wonder what it means. What do you think it means to be happy? In chapter 5, let me just start here. The Sermon on the Mount, which is part of the Beatitudes, is by far this longest teaching or explanation of what it means to be a follower of Christ. The Sermon on the Mount is considered, as I said, the greatest sermon Jesus ever preached. Each verse is like a proverb, the ones we've just read, a saying packed with meaning. Despite the fact that the Beatitudes, the Sermon on the Mount, have been highly debated and discussed for many years, most Bible scholars will agree that the Beatitudes, indeed the Sermon on the Mount, gives us a clear picture of what it means to be a disciple of Christ. And we in this room, I would say the majority of us, are all disciples of Christ. We're all followers of Jesus. The Sermon on the Mount comes towards the beginning of Jesus' ministry. Jesus, up until this point, had been baptized by John the Baptist and been tempted by Satan in the wilderness. Notice this, though, those verses that we've just read. That in chapter 5, verse 1 to 11, that Jesus does not give commandments here. He doesn't say do or go. But instead, they're statements or blessings intending to encourage and show those listening what it's like to be part of God's kingdom. And indeed, be a disciple of Christ. So they're not commandments. They're statements or blessings showing us what it means to be part of God's kingdom and be a disciple of Christ. All of which, at a time when Jesus spoke this, at a time in Jesus' day that was very countercultural. Does everyone know what I mean by that? Everything he said went against probably the culture at the time. And went against everything people thought what it was meant to be blessed by God. In Jesus' time, to be blessed by God meant doing good works. Everyone with me? It meant by doing something in order to be blessed. If I follow the laws, if I obey the commandments. But Jesus is very much, is, as we've often said, his kingdom is an upside down kingdom. It's opposite to what the people thought then and indeed today. I think those listening to Jesus at the time would have had a fair idea of what it meant to be blessed. The disciples, the people on the mountain, were listening to Jesus speak this. They would have all known what it was meant to be blessed. And for them it was to follow the commandments, to follow the laws, to do rituals. That's what it meant to be blessed. But Jesus had a different idea. And I think even us here this morning know what it means to be blessed. Well, we have an idea. I'm sure no one would say no to a holiday right now. I'm sure no one would say no to a nice car. But a good question to ask yourself, what does it mean to be really blessed? And then when you finish, when you go home during the week and you open this, read it, and meditate over it and think about what it means to be blessed, what it means to be happy. And I'm not saying this is going to be easy either, but it's what Jesus tells us. Verse 1, are you with me? What does the first one says? Blessed are the poor in spirit. Are you there? Blessed are the poor in spirit. It refers to spiritual poverty. The recognition that in our lives, we need God. Everyone knows, a person who is poor knows they're poor, don't they? But when we're spiritually poor, it's a recognition of the fact that we need God more in our lives. And no matter how long you've been following Christ, often we come to a point in our lives, no matter how long we're a Christian, that we need Christ even more. Would everyone agree with me? That like, you could be a Christian today or a Christian 30 years. I still need God today as much as I did the first day I gave my life to the Lord. To be blessed are the poor in spirit refers to spiritual poverty. And I added another note. And this is really something from my own life. I believe today that there's a real spiritual hunger in people. And I know this because I often have conversations with guys that I went to school with about faith and religion. There's an inquisitiveness. about what does it mean to follow Christ? What does it mean to know God? What is it all about? So I really believe that there is a spiritual hunger and inquisitiveness in people today to explore faith. But we know that it can only be filled by knowing Jesus and recognizing what he did on the cross for them. The second verse says, blessed are those who mourn. This refers to those who recognize the sin in their lives, that we don't have it all together, and the freedom that's found in the forgiveness of sins, and the joy found in a relationship with Jesus Christ. Verse 3 says, blessed are the meek. The worst thing about this word is the fact that it rhymes with weak. I thought that was hilarious, but obviously that didn't go down too well. Blessed are the meek. The problem with this word sounds like weak. Nelson's Illustrated Bible Dictionary defines meekness as this, and this is a really good definition of meekness. An attitude of humility towards God and gentleness towards men, springing from a recognition that Jesus is in control. It is strength and courage under control. Meekness is not weakness. Are you with me? Weakness is not weakness. Meekness is not that you go around with your head down and say, oh, I'm just a normal old Christian. Sure, I'm silly. That's not what it is. It is a strength and control, strength and courage under control, coupled with kindness. As a fruit of the Spirit, meekness is a virtue that should characterize the Christian today. Blessed are the meek. Are you feeling happy now? Next verse. Blessed are those who, it says, hunger and thirst for righteousness. This refers to those who passionately seek to be in a right relationship with God. We gave our life to the Lord. Often we'll remember the day or time that we did it. But it's an ongoing basis of often recommitting our lives to the Lord. And it's something we should constantly seek to be in, as the word righteousness refers to be in right standing with God. And it says, with people around us. Let me say that again. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Refers to those who passionately seek to be in a right relationship with God and those around us. So it's not just with God. It's with your neighbor. It's with your family. And it's with those who are in your life. Are you with me? Do you wish to be in a right relationship with God, or perhaps with others, members of your family, work, and colleagues? The next verse says, blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. Simply put, those who demonstrate mercy will in turn receive mercy. It's a reap what we sow type of principle. Mercy is shown through forgiveness and kindness. Blessed are those who blessed are the merciful, for they will receive merciful. Blessed are the pure in heart. Blessed are the pure in heart. For many teachers of the law and those listening to Jesus on the mountain, for many teachers of the law and those listening, purity often came, as I've said, through external rituals and ceremonies, works. But David, what did David pray? He said, King David, as we know, prayed, create in me a what? A pure heart, and renew a steadfast spirit within me. It's one of my favorite verses in the Bible. Renew, God, a pure heart in me. And put a steadfastness in my spirit that no matter what happens, I can get through it. It's an incredible verse, guys. To be pure in heart simply means, I think, to be genuine. It means to be real. It means to be honest with yourself and honest with those around with you. The worst thing you could ever do is try and cover up hard times. The worst thing you can do and say is admit things are all right. But to be pure in heart means to just be honest, to be genuine. to love God with all your heart, perhaps to love God with all your heart, his soul, your soul and mind, and not in a superficial way. Because a relationship with God can sometimes be very superficial. But a relationship with God should be pure. It should be genuine. Blessed are the peacemakers is in the next verse. In Greek, a peacemaker simply implies someone who makes or seeks peace. Are you a peacemaker? Or do you prefer to rile people up? Lorraine's like, are you a peacemaker? When there's a situation at home, or in your colleagues or work or friends, do you want to bring peace into a situation, or do you not? But we can only bring peace into a situation when we ourselves first know the Prince of Peace. And who's that? Jesus. You yourself need to know Jesus, because he's the ultimate Prince of Peace. And you can bring peace into a situation as a Christian. And I'm going to go on about that. The Bible says here, peace I leave with you. My peace I give you, not as the world gives you. Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid. God gives us that kind of peace. And you in turn, when you have that peace, you can bring that same peace into situations in your family and into your neighbors, in at home and work, etc. Verse 10 and 11, the most difficult parts of this whole thing. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness. Verse 11 says, blessed are you when people insult you or falsely say things about you because of me. Has anyone been in that situation before? It's difficult. I can't say I've ever been, you know, people have said nasty things towards me because of my faith. But the fact is, some people have had that experience. I know they have. And in Ireland, we're very lucky, aren't we, though, in fairness? You only have to look at the news at the moment and Christians are being persecuted, etc., etc. But in Ireland, we're very lucky in that we can talk about faith in a quite open and honest way. And we're not necessarily going to be, our heads are not going to be chopped off. But we do at times, and it's a reality of following Christ, that it isn't easy, is it? And the fact is that we will at times in our lives, people will consider us, have considered me narrow-minded or a bit silly or not intelligent and all those sort of things. But God says, blessed are those. Blessed are those who endure because of your faith, who seek to be in a right relationship with God despite the difficult times. That even if you're in the darkest of times, you still seek to be in a right relationship with God. When we stand out for Christ in whatever form that is, there are times when there can be a backlash. But the Bible doesn't teach us the following. But the Bible teaches us that great is our reward in heaven as a result of it. Verse 13. How many people like salt? I think Lorraine, do you have my salt there? How many people put too much salt on your chips? How many people hate the fact that when you go into McDonald's and you order your chips and someone puts like 3 or 4 sachets of salt all on their chips? I don't know, does anyone do that? Maybe it's just kids or something. But I never understood that because we all know chips already has salt on it. That's great advice. I know you're delighted. Mind of information. But verse 13 says this, you are the salt of the earth. You are the salt of the earth. I am the salt of the earth. And I want to say this is more than just a moral saying. But there's a real impact that comes with this when we get it. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled on by men. Colossians 4, a great verse, says again, let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer each person. That's a real tricky one, isn't it? Because we know sometimes we like to answer people in ways that probably isn't the right way. But our speech should always be seasoned with salt, so we know how best to answer people. There are many references in the Bible to the salt. And in fact, I could have spoke on salt itself today. You immediately think of, for those of you who know, of Lot's wife was turned into a pillar of salt. What that looks like, I'm not quite sure, but I'm sure it was fascinating. The Dead Sea, which is still there today. Salt, which salt was harvested from. So Jewish people would have harvested salt from the Dead Sea, and I'll explain why. Indeed, salt was a rare commodity in Jesus' time. Unlike today, many Roman soldiers were paid not in silver and gold, but in salt. Carol, congratulations. No, just put your hand out. So Carol just got loads of salt for... Oh, don't eat it. Sarah's just been paid for all the work that she's... It was a rare commodity, salt. It was something that, you know, not everyone had it. Indeed, so soldiers often got paid. Did you know also that the word salary and sale derive from the word salt? Slaves were sold for salt. And the term worth your salt, do you all know that term?
Yeah.
You're worth your salt. Comes from here, which means you deserve or not deserve the pay you get. I agree. Newborn babies in the Bible were rubbed in salt. I know, you think crazy. But I'm just telling you, there's a lot in the Bible about salt. And the idea was that the children would be raised to be truthful and with integrity. Today, salt is very important, isn't it? It's important for our diet. Or is it?
Yeah.
It is important. Rabin is the man when it comes to salt and all things food. So, but we salt is important for our diet, but in reality, as we take too much of it, I suppose all our packaging today already has salt on it, but of course we go and put more salt on it, and we think we're great. But what did Jesus mean when he said to his disciples, "You are the salt of the earth"? What did he really mean in that particular verse there and then? Salt refers to Christ-like character in us. Our relationship with him being expressed and shown to others. The word "you" are the salt of the earth. You are the salt of the earth. The disciples and us today, we are the salt of the earth. You, those of us who know Christ, can be used to help what? Preserve life. To make situations taste that little bit better. Are you with me now?
Yeah.
You. You're an integral part of God's kingdom. Do you know that? You are. Every one of us in this room. And salt, in a way, when you're in a situation, no matter how difficult it is, and you put your arm around someone and tell them it's going to be all right, what are you doing? You're being the salt in that situation. You can, in situations that are difficult, make situations taste that little bit better. Are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
It's important that you know that you are the salt of the earth. That you can help preserve life. That you can help make situations taste that bit better. Why? Because of Christ living in you. Have you ever been in that situation with someone, you could be at a funeral or whatever it is, and someone puts their arm around you and goes, "Thanks for helping me out today." That's you being salt to that person. Does that make sense? That's you doing. That's you being Christ-like. That's you showing the characteristic of salt to someone else. You, those of you who know Christ, can be used to help preserve life. Make situations, difficult situations, taste at times a little bit better. And I won't say always easy, because they're not. But I know if I have my friends who are Christians in my life, that often a situation will be a little bit easier. Jesus is saying to us, to know the Savior, you and you alone can preserve society, to make it productive for God. And you alone can give an added flavor and meaning in life because of your relationship with Jesus Christ. Does that make sense? Add flavor. and meaning in life into situations because of your relationship with Jesus and Christ. This is all in us. We can add flavor. What kind of flavor? God's flavor. We can give people a taste of Christ because of the salt that's in us. We can bring meaning to life because what? Of the relationship we have in Jesus Christ. Because the salt, that the characteristic of salt that is in every one of us. I wouldn't be here today without friends. And I was thinking this during the week, with the wedding season and all that. We're very blessed. I'm very blessed to have great friends. And it's because of their saltiness in difficult situations I'm here still today. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's because they put their arm around you and went, "It's okay, Andy. We're going to get through this." You have that saltiness in you. Salt creates thirst, like right I am now, right now. Salt creates thirst, doesn't it? Makes you thirsty. We as Christians create thirst in others. A thirst that can only be quenched by receiving the rivers of living water, a relationship with Jesus Christ. We create thirst in people. We make people thirsty, inquisitive. They want to know what it's like to be a Christian, what it means to know Christ. We create that thirst in people. As I've said, Colossians 5 also says, "Let your speech be seasoned with salt." Don't lose your saltiness. Don't ever lose your saltiness, guys. Because your saltiness is what is so important in situations that are difficult. Because it's you. You as an integral part of God's kingdom. An integral person, integral part of God's plan for Ireland, can bring God's flavor and God's saltiness into situations. Are you with me?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And we're kind of coming to an end. Is that all right? So we're probably going to sing a song. Is that all right? I started by saying, I think we should be salt to each other this morning. Okay? But not just here on a Sunday morning, can I say. When I was in the Martello recently with a friend I went to school with in secondary school. And he was there yet last night with us. And his name is Kevin. And I went to school in Kevin. We grew up in secondary school in Kilcullen in County Kildare. And Kevin, I've never had an openness with Kevin like I've had now. And we talked about faith for hours. Yes, it was over a pint. We talked about God and faith and religion and all sorts of things. But it's not because I'm great. It's because of my saltiness that allows Kevin to talk to me about God and life and faith. Are you with me? And it's because of that saltiness that allows me to have a great relationship now with Kevin. A guy that I went to school with, a guy that I played GAA with, a guy, he was kind of corner forward and I was in the middle. And we used to play football together. And here I am having that same conversation with a friend who I went to school with. That's what it means to be salty, folks. Does that make sense? But you all have that. And when you go home and you leave this room, and a situation might be difficult, put your arm around someone and said, "It's going to be okay." That's you being salt. So don't forget the importance of your role in the kingdom of God. And this morning,